AP Radio News. I'm Tim McGuire. People who live in a rural neighborhood in northeastern Pennsylvania are being allowed to come and go as they please, even as police search the area for the suspect in the deadly ambush at a state police barracks. The AP's Kathy Matheson reports authorities are certain Eric Freen is somewhere near his parents' house.
Police have been saying for days now that they believe he's still in the area. They have never told us why they believe that, but that's why they are focusing the resources there.
Freen is accused of killing one state trooper, wounding another in a late-night shooting last weekend. Joint Chiefs of Staff Chairman General Martin Dempsey says President Obama has not yet signed off on the international campaign against the Islamic State group. He tells reporters,
in part because we're not yet completed with our work of building the coalition, and in particular the part of the coalition that includes Arab nations. I think that would be the point at which the campaign plan would go into its next phase.
Dempsey has been in Lithuania meeting with his NATO counterparts. Afghanistan's two presidential candidates have agreed to a power-sharing deal, ending weeks of uncertainty in Kabul. AP's Jason Strasiuso has details.
This national unity government, this power-sharing deal, creates the new position of chief executive, and that's similar to the role of prime minister, who usually has primacy over a cabinet.
A White House spokesman says President Obama has full confidence in the Secret Service, even after two security issues this past weekend. Head of the agency has ordered stepped-up security and a comprehensive review after a man with a knife scaled a fence and made it inside the front door of the White House on Friday night. Yesterday, another man was arrested as he was trying to gain entry. He was blocking an entrance to the White House complex at the time with his car. This is AP Radio News. Wildfire in the tall timber in Northern California keeps nearly 3,000 people away from their homes.
As far as the evacuees, we're telling them that we're continually trying to assess when we can let them back in safely.
Fire spokesman Mike McMillan says the 128-square-mile blaze, some 60 miles from Sacramento, keeping crews from even getting into the neighborhoods to see how many homes have been lost. McMillan says as many as 12,000 homes and other structures are threatened. SpaceX cargo ship is on its way to the International Space Station. SpaceX Vice President Hans Koenigsmann.
Weather cleared up in time, rain dissipated, and from what I can tell, at first glance, everything was really perfect.
On board the Dragon capsule, 3D printer for astronauts in orbit. It's a demonstration model to see if such a printer could be used in the future to make spare parts for the space station. I'm Tim McGuire, AP Radio News.
The National Building Museum presents Designing for Disaster, a new exhibition exploring how design, engineering, and construction respond to natural disasters. Discover how we can save lives and build more resilient communities. Featuring the interactive Wall of Wind, where visitors of all ages can test proof performance in hurricane force winds. Open now at the National Building Museum. Find hours and admission information online at nbm.org. That's nbm.org.
This is Mark Amtower. If you're looking for cost-effective and efficient methods for marketing your products or services to the government or to other government contractors, look to LinkedIn. There are over 400,000 members in the D.C. area and more than 92 million nationwide, but only a small percentage actually use it well. I can show you how to leverage LinkedIn in ways that support your marketing, sales, and business development efforts. I do this for large and small companies, and I can do it for you. Drop me a line at mark@federaldirect.net.
In the small town of Elmira, New York, a boy was born into an all-American family. The odds of him achieving his dream in the fashion industry? 1 in 23 million. The odds of having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 68. I am Tommy Hilfiger, and my family is affected by autism. Learn more at autismspeaks.org/signs. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
The federal government produces massive amounts of information every day, but most of it's useless beyond the agency that produces it because it's not available in a usable format. That's starting to change. With the passage of the Data Act, the first steps have been taken. But what's next? Join the Data Transparency Coalition and Workiva September 30th for Data Transparency 2014, the preeminent gathering of leaders from Congress, the executive branch, and industry to find out what's next for data transparency and open data. Register today at datatransparency2014.org.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Executive Leaders Radio. In this hour, you'll hear directly from our region's finest business leaders. Through each of the interviews, these high-achieving leaders become relatable role models who share how they were able to build their enterprise, their personal secrets of success, about leadership styles and opportunities that lie ahead. Prepare to be inspired and entertained and to hear wisdom unheard elsewhere. Executive Leaders Radio.
You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the Tyson's Corner offices of Offutt Kerman. This is your host, Dana Theus with InPowerCoaching.com, and my co-host, Terry Kenny with TD Bank. We have a great lineup of guests for you on our show today, starting off with David Notari, CEO of Innovation Health, Mary Giliberti, CEO and Executive Director of the National Alliance on Mental Illness, Maria Ezarieta, CFO of Three Pillar Global, and Courtney West, owner and president of Chariots for Hire. We start off with David Notari, CEO of Innovation Health. David, what is Innovation Health?
Innovation Health is a new insurance company in Northern Virginia serving businesses and individuals. It's a joint venture between Innova and Aetna, started in the fourth quarter of 2013.
So when you said new, you weren't kidding.
No, it's brand new. we've been in business less than a year, but we've had some really good early success.
And how big or small is the Innovation Health?
By the end of this year, we are going to be a company of $200 million, representing over 115,000 members in the Northern Virginia marketplace.
And you're running this new thing.
I am.
How did you get that job?
Yeah, prior to coming to Innovation Health, I ran Aetna's national businesses in the individual and small group spaces. Small group, 2 to 100, individual, self-explanatory. And I did that for 2.5 years. And I was recruited to come and take a look at this opportunity to see if there's something I was interested in.
And I have to believe that part of what they were looking for in you was a real desire to grow something, to grow the business.
Absolutely. That was the driving force. I've had success in my career of taking organizations and growing them. So this was a great opportunity for us.
So how young were you where this desire to succeed and win and grow came from?
Probably goes back to my childhood where I worked since I was 14 years old. I started out working in Newark, New Jersey, unloading trucks during the day and at a clothing store at night altering men's suits. So I never had a problem working. It was always a passion of mine and I liked working and growing and making money.
But you decided not to be a tailor.
That's right, yeah. Although I love clothing, it just wasn't in the cards.
What was it that made you want to go into running businesses as opposed to doing them?
I think the exciting part about running a startup organization is taking it from zero membership to where we are today. Now, I'm not satisfied with 150,000 members. I'm very excited to take it really to the next level. This market is very unique. It has about 1.6 million members that buy commercial insurance today. I'm not going to be greedy. All I want is 50% of the marketplace.
So where did you get that drive to win?
Yeah, I think it early on, I was always in athletics. Mm. I played many sports as a kid. In high school, I played 3 sports. And in college, I played soccer for 4 years, where 2 years I was a captain. So working as a team, in strategy and teamwork and team spirit really came from my athletics.
Mm-hmm. So, David, I'd like to ask you, given your experiences, who was a mentor to you at a young age and who are some of your mentors today?
Well, going back to when I was 14 and working in the warehouse, my next-door neighbor ran the warehouse, and I really looked up to him because he was a really hard worker. We would leave at 5 o'clock in the morning and not get home many times till 6, 7 o'clock at night. And I looked at him as, very successful and had that drive. And then throughout my years of business, I always sought out the people that were successful in the organization, tried to identify what made them successful, and then tried to be better than them. And that really was the driving force behind how, you know, what I do to try to learn and be better as a leader.
Gotcha. So you obviously have a very strong competitive spirit.
Yes. I love to win, whether that's in business or on the soccer field. I coached many of my kids in their sports. And the passion, the drive, the strategy behind athletics really plays well in the business world as well.
Are you still playing sports today?
I wish I was. I actually I work out 4 days a week, but my primary workout is due to the two knee replacements that I just had.
Oh my!
Back in April, so I'm working to rebuild the strength and the stability in my knees, but it's really concentrated on that. So no more sports for me.
Yeah, but that must be an interesting shift to go through as an adult, being an athlete to being in PT.
Yeah, you know, I spent really the last 10 years trying to figure out how I'm going to be able to do the things I love to do, which is, you know, work hard, stay physically fit. And it was a challenge. And now that I have the new knees, it really released a new opportunity for me to even be able to walk the dog around the block.
Wow. Well, we have to be thankful for the small things in life, right?
Absolutely.
So going back to your childhood, yeah. Who was more a source of inspiration for you, your mother or your father?
I would say my mother. She was a very hardworking woman. She stayed at home to raise a family of three. And at the age of 12, she went back to work full-time, working for a primary care physician as a nurse. And at that point in my life, we realized that I needed to be a little bit more independent and rely less on her. But I watched her go to work in the morning, come home at night, take care of the family, put a hot meal on the table every single night. She was an amazing woman and is to this day. Just really a hard worker, and I think I've gotten my work ethic from her.
What did you get from your dad?
My dad was extremely supportive of the family. He worked for the government in the beginning of his career and retired with the government, working for an Army installation. But the one thing about my dad is he never missed a soccer game, a track meet, a basketball game. He was there to really support the family. And I think that's really important for myself, even though I have a very important role in the organization. I make time to make sure I never miss a lacrosse game or a soccer game of my kids.
You know, we hear a lot from, well, not just from women, but about women. They have this work-life struggle, and yet you are in that effort to balance your work and your life. Yeah. Do you find that to be stressful?
Yeah, I it's extremely stressful. You know, it's being the CEO of an organization, you have to be on 24/7. There's no downtime. Finding ways to manage your time is extremely important. And I do that through coming into the office very early in the morning and sometimes, you know, going out to dinner with customers and staying late at night. But finding a way to work the important things in life into that schedule is extremely important. And I've learned that from my dad.
What's harder, running a business or being a dad?
It all depends on the day. I have three boys, 19, 17, and 15. I call it the expensive years. And at times, I would tell you, raising the family and guiding my boys in the right direction and making sure they're doing the things they need to do to be successful in life is an important job. And I will tell you that I rely on my wife to help out with that role. It's important that they have guidance from both of us, not just me. But running a business is complicated, and important to make sure you have the right people, and many of the women on my executive team are struggling with that balance of managing a family and being successful in business as well.
So, David, before I believe you were very successful in sales, and now you're actually leading the organization. So what are some of the obstacles you've found, some of the challenges as you've made this transition?
Yeah, I still see my role as the chief sales officer as well of the organization. Growth solves all problems. in business. And as long as we're growing, we will do well. So I think that some of the challenges of making the transition is, you know, as we create the strategy for the organization, it's making sure that the team members are executing flawlessly on a day-to-day basis. And sometimes I have to stop myself from trying to get too deep in the weeds and have to rely on the people to really execute and drive this overall strategy. So the transition from going and selling the business myself to actually leading the overall strategy has been a tough one, but something that I'm still learning at and still mastering.
So I'm wondering, if your mom were here now, what would you like to tell her that you've never told her before?
Well, I would tell her that she probably doesn't know how much of an inspiration she was to me. And how keenly I watched her through the years support our family. And I've never told her thank you. So I would tell her, Mom, thanks for being so supportive and making me who I am today.
Well, we'll make sure she listens to this.
Great.
What's the website?
The website is innovation-health.com.
This is Dana Theis with my co-host, Terry Kenny with TD Bank. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be back right after this Business Spotlight.
And your name is?
Dana Theis.
And the name of the organization?
InPowerCoaching.com.
And what does Empower Coaching do?
Well, we support mid-level to senior managers mm-hmm. and leaders mm-hmm. Achieve professional success by developing themselves personally.
Why does this turn you on so much?
Well, I have found in my own experience and my own leadership journey mm-hmm. that the better I was at being a good human being, the better mm-hmm. leader and the better business I ran and mm-hmm. the more successful I was. And I want to help other people do that.
So you're able to help the folks in an organization throughout the organization achieve what they're looking for, as well as help the organization move forward.
Well, to move an organization forward, mm-hmm. you've got to master the soft skills of mm-hmm. dealing with people effectively. Mm-hmm. You've got to learn to negotiate every relationship successfully mm-hmm. for mm-hmm. both parties. Mm-hmm. You have to communicate confidently. Mm-hmm. I support people and help them learn to develop those skills themselves to be strong mm-hmm. leaders.
And you have a specialty working with women?
I do work a lot with women. Mm-hmm. They're drawn to this work, but not mm-hmm. exclusively.
Mm-hmm. And to learn more about what you're up to, is there a website address?
InPowerCoaching.com. That's InPowerCoaching.com.
Excellent. This has been your Business Spotlight.
This is Les Smolin with Vistage International, and this is your Business Spotlight. Joining us today is Isabella Fuentes, Marketing Director at BusinessWise CPAs. Isabella, what is BusinessWise CPAs?
BusinessWise CPA supports government contractors, small businesses, and nonprofits with outsourced CFO and financial consulting services.
And what's your role in the company?
I'm the marketing director.
And as the marketing director, what does that mean?
Well, I actually wear several hats. My primary role is to improve and extend the branding of BusinessWise CPA through referrals, client meetings, networking in the D.C. area, mm-hmm. As well as supporting current client relationships.
And what do you like most about your job?
I like the most that I don't have to be at a desk all day. I'm out and about meeting new folks and learning experiences from other entrepreneurs.
Right. What makes your organization so special in your view?
I believe our added value is that we are not just a number report kind of type firm. We're very much integrated with our clients. They rely on us for all important decisions. We help them not only with the numbers, but on the future growth of the business.
And what is it that the clients appreciate most about the company?
That they can call us and they talk to the same person every time.
Okay, and who's the perfect client?
Perfect client is small to mid-size organization looking to save on a full-time employee and as well as get the added value of the consulting.
Great. What's the website for the company?
www.businesswisecpa.com.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Isabella Fuentes, marketing director at BusinessWise CPAs. This is Les Smolin, and that's been your Business Spotlight.
We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Dana Theus, with my co-host, Terry Kenny with TD Bank. Next up, we have Mary Gilliberti, CEO and Executive Director of the National Alliance on Mental Illness. Mary, what is the National Alliance on Mental Illness?
The National Alliance on Mental Illness is the nation's largest grassroots mental health organization, providing advocacy, public awareness, education, and support to improve the lives of people affected by mental illness. I run our national office, but we also have state organizations and over 1,000 local affiliates in communities all over the country.
Why is mental illness so important to you?
Well, I think it goes back to an experience that I had in college. I had two friends. One had muscular dystrophy and the other one had major depression. And their courage in the face of what their adversity really had a profound impact on me. And they both died young. And my friend with major depression died by suicide right after graduation. And I learned that mental illnesses could be lethal, just like physical conditions. And I think that had a profound impact on my life. And when I went to law school, I also represented a number of people in our clinical program. They let you try out law. You know, you get to practice. and I represented a number of people with mental illness. And I saw that they weren't treated the same way that other people were treated. They were looked down upon. They weren't given the same rights. And it really had a major impact on my career.
So this compassion that you have for people with mental illness, it's not only with people with mental illness. And I think it started even before you were in college. Tell us about your early experiences leading in a compassionate way.
Yes, when I was in high school, I led an adopt-a-grandparent program, and that was very influential in my life. I helped a gentleman who was very isolated, kind of lived by himself, and I visited him frequently. And then when I went to college, I was a big brother, big sister. I was a big sister to a young girl in a housing project in Cambridge. So, you know, those experiences, I think, also had an influence on my career and wanting to help people in what I was doing.
Mm-hmm. What were mom and dad doing when you were young?
My dad was a clerical worker for the New York Stock Exchange before they automated things there. And my mom was a stay-at-home mom until I was about 9. And then she went back to college. And then she got a job working in insurance and claims area. But going back to college, I think also her experience had a pretty important effect on me, seeing her set those goals and achieve them. And I think the fact that the women's movement was just becoming sort of prominent then, it was really important to her that I have all the opportunities that she felt that women really hadn't had in the past.
Did you sort of observe that, or did she actually make an effort to make sure you knew what was going on?
Oh, no, she made an effort to talk to me about that, about the importance of having a career and being independent and the importance of you know, all of those things. My mom talked to me about that frequently, and setting goals and achieving those goals, that was really important to her, and she was able to do that with her college career and then also in saving to put me through college.
Mm-hmm. So you're obviously extremely socially compassionate, and I guess, you know, where do you find your inspiration on a daily basis to continue to do what you do?
Well, one of the ways is, as part of my job, a couple of hours on a week, I work our helpline. And I take calls from all over the country of people who are needing help. And this has had a profound effect on me and just feeling like I'm able to provide assistance, mostly because we have local folks in communities. We have volunteers all over the country that give their time. And it really helps me appreciate all our volunteers. And that's important as the executive director. You know, we have a lot of people in our organization that give their time to answering phones locally, providing classes, supporting people. And it really helps me be very grateful for their work because they're able to really help these people on the ground. So, and that inspires me because it inspires me both from the people I'm helping, but also the people on the ground who are giving back. And you'd be surprised, giving back really helps people themselves with their recovery.
And Mary, I believe you told us before, 1 in 4 citizens have some form of mental illness or disorder.
That's correct. It's a large number
it
here in the United
huge,
States.
And mm-hmm. it's also, it seems to me, there's still some stigma associated with this mental illness, you know, as being a disease. How do you deal with that?
it certainly is still a problem. There's still a lot of prejudice and discrimination. My mom and I were just talking about how hard it is for people to talk about mental illness. And when she was a teenager, my grandmother was diagnosed with breast cancer. And in those days, you didn't talk about breast cancer. I mean, there was a huge taboo subject. And now you can. And I'm hopeful, although we're still not there for mental illness, that we can get there over time. And we're seeing more and more youth. We have a lot of social media at NAMI. Every quarter, we have more than 5 million people that interact with us on various social media ways, Facebook, Tumblr, Twitter. And I really do feel like the youth, eventually, we will make progress in this area. But it's still there. It's still very real. And we have a lot of work to do.
Just out of curiosity, what is it we don't know about mental illness that we should know?
Well, I think we should know that it's a health condition like any other. I think people don't remember that, it is a condition that affects the brain, just like there are conditions that affect the heart, that affect the lungs, that affect other parts of the body, and it should be treated that way and not have the discrimination and prejudice that we see today.
And what should we do if we know people who are struggling with this? What can we do to help? You mentioned that when you were in college and you had a friend who was struggling, you didn't know what to do.
Right. I didn't know what to do, and I didn't provide the support that I think I would have liked to. I mean, we have a new program going into high schools called Ending the Silence that's designed to sort of teach high school students about these illnesses, that they are conditions like any other, and that you should come forward, and how to support a friend, how to be that support rather than sort of a detriment.
Well, we don't have time here for the whole class, but what's the one thing we should all know?
Well, I just think that it is a condition like any other condition. It's important to get help if you're experiencing the signs of mental illness, to go seek help, call a helpline, reach out to a friend, reach out to a trusted adult if you're a high school student. You know, get assistance. And if you have a friend or someone else, be a support to them. Help them get assistance. And certainly don't treat them any less because they have these kind of conditions.
Let's go back to Long Island, where you grew up.
Right.
And did you have any brothers and sisters?
I did. I had a younger brother.
So you were the oldest.
I was.
Do you see any patterns there in being the oldest and running an organization, a national organization with such an important mission?
I absolutely do. You know, when you're the oldest, you're the first one to face whatever's coming at you, whether it's a new school or a new environment. And when you're the CEO, you're the one that's kind of dealing with the different things that are happening either in the environment or in the organization. So I think there is a parallel there.
And now you find yourself leading this organization with such a critical mission. How do you define success?
Well, I think we will define success as when people get the help that they need, and people are able to access the supports and services that they need, and also when the prejudice and discrimination is reduced and people are aware of mental illness and also aware of how to get help. I think those are the ways that we will see change.
What does success mean for you personally?
I think success for me means leading the organization in a positive way. Both our volunteers out there, our local organizations, have them be inspired and thanked. It's really important to me to thank people for their commitment. So I think success to me will be people feeling engaged and thanked and welcome in our organization throughout the country. And then also that our organization grows and continues to be out there sending the message that mental illness is a condition like any other. Services, supports, and treatment work. People get better, and people should get help and support each other.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like you've done a good job.
Thank you.
What's the website?
www.nami.org.
This is Dana Theus with my co-host, Terry Kenny at TD Bank. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be back in a moment right after this Business Spotlight.
This is Les Smolin with Vistage International, and this is your Business Spotlight. Joining us today is Dr. Shirley Davis, President and CEO, The Success Doctor. Welcome, Shirley. Shirley, what's The Success Doctor all about?
It's a global workforce and talent management consulting organization. What we do is track trends, and we identify best practices and strategies for organizations around the world of all sizes, all industries, and help them understand how to get great talent, how to keep it, and how to make sure that they get the most out of it.
And what's your role in the company?
My role is president and CEO, and I actually do a lot of the coaching and speaking and consulting.
And what do you like most about that?
absolutely love the strategy development and helping to get leaders to that aha moment.
Mm-hmm. And what makes the organization so special, in your view?
Capturing a lot of the great best practices that we've been able to do. And I think, you know, my brand, I build great relationships and I provide them what they need instead of what I want them to have.
Mm-hmm. And what do you think the clients appreciate most about you and your company?
I make the strategies, even though they're global, I make them very, very customized and practical.
Uh-huh. And who, in your view, is the ideal client, the perfect client?
The perfect client is one that has a need, and the perfect client is one that can recognize that there is an opportunity with the strategies that we provide for them to make their organizations better.
Mm-hmm. And what do you personally enjoy most about the work?
I love seeing the strategies come to life. I love seeing the impact and the results that come as a result of it. Mm-hmm. And I love when they call me back and thank me because they've seen change.
That's excellent. And what's the website for the company?
DrShirleyDavis.com. That's www.drshirleydavis.com.
Thank you, Shirley. We've been speaking with Dr. Shirley Davis, President and CEO of The Success Doctor. This is Les Smolin, and that's been your Business Spotlight.
This is Peter Schwartz with Vistage International, and this is your Business Spotlight. Joining me for this segment is Doug Kay, who is a principal with a firm called Offutt Kerman. What is Offutt Kerman, Doug?
Offutt Kerman is a full-service law firm in the Mid-Atlantic region with offices from Philadelphia all the way down to Tysons Corner, Virginia, where I work.
Right. And you're a lawyer with the firm?
I'm a lawyer with the firm.
What practice area do you specialize in?
I mostly do work in commercial litigation, although I also do work with in doing criminal defense and personal injury, anything that gets me to trial.
Anything that gets you to trial. Well, why do your customers appreciate you?
I think they appreciate me because I am a careful and sympathetic listener, and I try to offer concrete solutions to their most vexing legal problems.
Well, give us an example. Do you have, without mentioning specifics, a recent example of where you were really good at this? How about your favorite client up till now, without getting into two particulars there?
Well, I represented a fellow who was in a commercial lease, and the landlord was determined to make him pay more than he should have been paying. And we had to go to court, and we had to go all the way through trial, and the client really appreciated the effort, and we got an excellent result for the client. And that was very satisfying. And since then, he's been talking me up all over town, so I can't thank him enough.
Yeah. What's the best part of practicing law for you?
I would say that it is taking people through difficult circumstances when they think they don't have any options and trying to find a good solution for them.
Right. What's the website address for the law firm?
www.offuttkerman.com.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Doug Kay, who's the principal with Offutt Kerman. This is Peter Schwartz, and that was your Business Spotlight.
We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Dana Theis, with my co-host, Terry Kenny, with TD Bank. Next up, we have Maria Izarrieta, CFO of Three Pillar Global. Maria, what is Three Pillar Global?
We are a disruptor in our industry. We focus on bringing innovation to our clients, helping them drive revenue and customer stickiness through their software. Simply put, we build great software products that are built with purposeful engineering.
Now, you're the CFO, which means you're good with numbers, but what do you uniquely bring to the organization?
What I bring to the organization is really ability to help mentor and coach team members in order for them to be able to deliver their best. Any company, particularly ours, because we're essentially a professional services organization, our asset that we bring to the table is our team. And having great talent is why our customers come to us. And so it's really important that we build that talent. And so I spend a large portion of my day coaching and mentoring and helping our team members realize that they can achieve more than they did yesterday, and doing that by showing them a way to excel, allowing them to push outside their comfort zone, but always know that they have a safety net.
So how young were you when this
this comfort in a team and the joy in the team performance really it became part of your life?
Not sure I know an age, but certainly in elementary, junior high, I've always gravitated to environments where there was a team. So whether or not I was in the Girl Scouts or played sports, I wanted to be some part of something that was larger than myself, and I wanted to contribute to a group of individuals that together could achieve more than any one of us could achieve by ourselves.
What were Mom and Dad doing when you were a kid?
I had a pretty traditional structure at home. I have fabulous supportive parents. My dad worked with the Washington Post for his career, retired from the Washington Post. And my mom was a stay-home mom for a number of years and then went back to work as an executive assistant in a law firm.
And you described an interesting turning point in your life when you were six. Tell us about that.
Yes. My parents, hardworking, strong ethics, and my parents had just bought their first, I'll call it, home, the one they still live in today. And my dad was with the Post when they did the strikes here in Washington, D.C.
And so he was on strike.
So he was on strike, and he was on strike for many months. And it was a pretty traumatic experience for me because I got to see my parents struggle financially. It was very pressure point for them in that it was two people without money, and at that point, two children to support, and a brand new house with a brand new mortgage.
Right.
And at six, I got very stressed. I was on medication because I was so stressed because I saw the stress of my parents. And with that, I realized I never wanted to be in a situation where money dictated my life, that I wanted to have choices, whatever those choices look like, but I wanted to make sure I had choices. So business became a very important component of my life very early on.
Yes, it definitely did. I can see from your experience. So what was the first experience you had where you actually made money, and what were you doing?
So my parents were very good at learning moments, and they wanted to make sure that I knew the value of a dollar, and if I wanted something, that meant I had to earn it. And as a child, that was mowing the lawn. As I got older and was able to work outside the house, so to speak, it was babysitting in the neighborhood. My actual first real job was the shampoo girl at the local haircutting place.
Oh, wow.
And so I was doing whatever I could to make money to get the things that I wanted to have.
So curiosity, did at that young age when you were doing those jobs, was it also coming from that stress of not wanting to not have money? Or was it more of the pull to, you know, hey, I want to buy things?
It was both. I wanted to have the safety net in the bank account so that I could do what I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. I wanted to have choices. And so whether or not it was saving for my first car, my parents said, sure, you can have a car when you get a driver's license. You get to pay for half. And so that was my goal. I wanted to be able to buy a car as soon as I got my driver's license. And so I had to work and save money in order to make that happen.
You definitely had a very, your childhood was very full of these experiences for you. So who do you think you emulate more, your father or your mother?
Great question. I don't know. I think I take something from both of them. Both of them are very hardworking, very determined, and always striving to learn something new, to do something different, to move forward. And those are a lot of the qualities that I got from them. At the same time, being very grounded, that, you know, family is incredibly important, our support, our friendships are very important, and that you never turn your back on those.
I'm curious, because you've had an interesting leadership experience. You're a CFO now, you've been a CEO. And we hear a lot about how women don't have a lot of role models for leadership, and I'm wondering what your experience with that has been, both, you know, looking for role models and also being a role model.
Great question. I had a lot of wonderful mentors, and being a female executive, as I've moved up the leadership ranks, quite frankly, there haven't been that many female leaders in front of me. So I've really had to look outside the organizations that I have been in to find the female leadership. But quite frankly, I've had so many wonderful male mentors. Either they've pushed me to do more than I thought I was able to do, or they opened doors for me because they believed in me. And those experiences are just as powerful as anything that a woman could do for me. And you know, when I give back now, it's important to me to mentor not just females, but males as well, because I can bring something to the table to males that maybe other males cannot do.
Like, and what?
You know, we had an interesting conversation at the office not that long ago about the difference between men and women and how we approach different situations. And one of the conversations was around men use their networks for business. Women use their networks for support. And one of the reasons women have a difference is that if I'm a friend with somebody and I ask them for business, I'm afraid of what the answer no would mean to our relationship. And when I mentioned that to the gentleman in our office, they were astounded that I would have that concern, that a relationship could be damaged or concerned about because someone said no to business, because they completely separated it out. And for them, no means, okay, fine, let's go have a drink. Let's go golfing. And their reaction to a no was just so different than a woman's reaction to a no.
Mm-hmm. That's a really interesting insight, and I'm sure everybody was smarter for it. These sort of gender intelligence.
We all
issues.
Had some eye-opening moments with the conversation.
Exactly.
Dana had mentioned that you've also been a CEO. So can you compare and contrast the differences between CEO and CFO?
They're both wonderful roles. I've enjoyed both of them. And you know, I think the CEO has some very unique aspects to it that no other role in an organization has. And that is, they are the leader. They are the buck stops here. And it can be fairly lonely role. You don't always have a peer to bounce ideas off of, to discuss sensitive topics with, to address issues. You don't have necessarily a backstop to you. You make a decision and it's yours. Your team falls down, it's yours. Your team succeeds, it's theirs. And so as a CEO, it's just a different role because you don't have necessarily the same support system that you would as a CFO. I have my peers, I have my CEO, and I have the surrounding, all I have a 360 support net with me. And one of the aspects to being a CFO that I take very proudly, and I find it to be an important role, is to make sure that I partner with the CEO of the organization to make sure that I give him that safety net, that I'm his sounding board, the confidant, the ability to bounce ideas off of without it leaving the four walls, so that they have a comfort zone and feel like they've got someone who's got their back.
What's the website?
3Pillar Global, and the 3 is the number, .com.
This is Dana Theus with my co-host, Terry Kenny. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be back in just a moment after this business spotlight.
This is Les Smolin with Vistage International, and this is your business spotlight. Joining us today is Jody Ruth, founder and president of Acumetrics. Welcome, Jody. Jody, what is Acumetrics?
Acumetrics is a firm that works with CEOs that are interested in growing their revenues and bottom lines in a scalable, sustainable way.
And what's your role within the company?
I'm the founder and president.
And what is it about the job that you bring that's so unique to you, that special gift, as we say?
That special gift? I enjoy working with the CEOs to have them achieve goals that they thought were impossible.
And what is it about the organization that makes it so special?
Our clients say that it's the three P's: our people, our platform, and our processes. Our people are highly qualified and they're fun to work with. Mm-hmm. Our processes are enabling of reliable and timely financial information, and our platform is scalable.
And who is, or what is perhaps, the perfect client for you?
Businesses of any size that want reliable, timely financial information.
Mm-hmm. And what do you enjoy most about this work?
I enjoy working with the clients and making a difference. We like to help the CEOs understand their financial information so they can make different choices tomorrow to impact future results of the business.
That's great. What's the website for the company?
www.acumetricsllc.com.
Thank you, Jody.
Thanks, Les.
We've been speaking with Jody Ruth, founder and president of Acumetrics. This is Les Smolin, and that's been your Business Spotlight. This is Les Smolin with Vistage International, and this is your Business Spotlight. Joining us today is Mark Cohn, founder of Cohn & Burnett, a law firm. Mark, welcome. What is Cohn & Burnett?
We are a law firm that focuses on trusts and estates. So we do wills, trusts, powers of attorney, estate planning, and estate administration.
And what's your role in the company?
I'm the founder and the senior partner.
So what does it mean to be a senior partner?
Well, it means that in our case, I'm the thought leader, the visionary, the one who tries to figure out where we're headed. I'm not the managing partner who runs the day-to-day operations.
Okay, and what makes Cohn & Burnett so special?
We are, first of all, focused on taking care of our clients and just on their estate planning and administration. And I think we're one of the first firms in the area to introduce a fixed fee for doing estate planning.
Interesting. And what do they really appreciate about you and the company, your clients, that is?
You know, the clients tell me that they just love the experience. They are very comfortable and confident that their needs are being met here, and they enjoy working with us.
Hmm. And who or what is your perfect client, if you will?
Our perfect client is anybody who cares about what's going to happen to them when they can no longer take care of themselves or their family.
Mm-hmm. And what is it you actually enjoy most about the work?
You know, talking to the clients, that's the part. I could turn over all of the work to other attorneys here, but I hold on to the first part, which is meeting the clients, talking to them, getting to know them, getting to understand where they're, what they need and what they're looking for.
That's great. What's the website for Cohn & Burnett?
CohnAndBurnett.com, all spelled out, the A-N-D in between there.
Thank you, Mark. We've been speaking with Mark Cohn, founder of Cohn & Burnett. This is Les Smolin, and that's been your Business Spotlight.
We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Dana Theus, with my co-host, Terry Kenny of TD Bank. Next up, we have Courtney West, owner and president of Chariots for Hire. Courtney, what is Chariots for Hire?
Chariots for Hire is a local transportation company. We specialize in sedans, SUVs, small, large limousines, as well as limousine buses, shuttle buses, and motor coaches.
And you're the founder of this company.
That is correct.
Why found a Chariots for Hire firm?
That's a great question. We started in 2002. And at that time, I was working for a Fortune 500 company, and my very good friend was also working for a different Fortune 500 company. And we were at a local watering hole having a few cocktails and decided that we were tired of our careers in a Fortune 500 companies and decided to open up our own business. So after throwing out some ideas of opening up our own bar or a tow truck company, a limousine company, it surfaced. And we decided in our late 20s that if we succeeded, fantastic, and if we failed, we'd have a heck of a good time trying.
So was this the first business you'd ever started up?
It is not. I started up a lawn and landscape company.
How old were you then?
I was 12.
And why, when you were 12, did you start a company?
So at the time, when I was 12 years old, the big thing was the Nintendo play systems, the game systems. And I went to my parents and said, I'd like to have a Nintendo, whether it was my birthday or Christmas. That's what I would like. And they said, fantastic. It's $350. Why don't you figure out a way to save that money and you go ahead and buy yourself a Nintendo. So I knocked on some neighbors' doors and asked them if I could cut their lawn using my parents' lawnmower, and had a couple successes, had a couple yeses, and saved up the $350, bought the Nintendo, but then also in the process realizing that I kind of liked this weekly money that was coming in.
So was it the experience of having money that kind of fueled you to want to build and grow the business?
It definitely was the start of it, and then I think is also the feeling of success, the feeling of accomplishment. It is one thing, especially with cutting lawns. The nice thing about it is you walk away with a picture of exactly what it was before in your mind and what it looked like afterwards. So you do have that sense of accomplishment and, wow, I did a good job.
Success is very tangible.
In that business, it is.
So, but I'm curious, because in high school, you were actually buying assets and hiring employees, and it wasn't pocket money. It was a real business.
It was. It was a real business that certainly helped me out, helped my family out, and was able to pay for half my college education.
So looking back on that, who do you think you're more like, your mother or your father?
Well, I hope they're not listening to this. I would probably say more like my mother. I would say both of them have a significant drive, but I would say that the things that she ingrained and taught all three of us definitely instilled in me for the success of the businesses.
So who is your inspiration today, as you look to grow Chariots for Hire?
There was a very dear friend of mine. Her father was a great influence in my life. Gave me just a lot of sage advice, words of wisdom, some wonderful experiences I had with him. Unfortunately, he's no longer with us, but he was really somebody that was a great person for me to follow and learn from.
When you were younger, did you have brothers and sisters?
Yes, I have two younger sisters. One is 2 years younger, and the second one is 10 years younger.
10 years younger.
Yes.
Did you find yourself taking care of her?
I did. My dad traveled a lot, worked very hard, and my mom also working full-time and taking care of three kids. Yes, I found myself helping around the house, taking her to ballet, taking her to different sporting practices and games and so forth. So, yes.
So when you were a kid, you were actually responsible for a business, part of the family. How has this responsibility blossomed into your current success?
It's a great question, and I would say it definitely had a big part of it. I look back, and it was crazy at times. I also played sports in high school, so I remember vividly one day coming home, cutting a lawn with the crew, going back, playing in a lacrosse game, and after the lacrosse game, coming home, and my dad taking me out in the truck, and it was 8:30, 9 o'clock at night. The lawn still needed to be cut, so I was cutting the lawn as my dad was moving the truck with the headlights so I could see the grass that I was cutting. So it was crazy times, but I think it allowed me to how to juggle things, how to manage my time.
That's what I was going to say. So you experienced entrepreneurship and all the pitfalls, et cetera, that come with that. So how would you contrast that, and what lessons do you learn that you apply today?
Time management, for one, is one of the lessons that I learned. And if I can look at myself of how and when I do my best work, I realize that I do my best when I am busy. And I think that has been a great life lesson for me. I don't do my best work when I look at my calendar and there's nothing on the day of the events. I do my best work, and I find that my mind is working its best when I've got a full calendar and I'm juggling a lot of balls in the air.
You talked about your mom and dad being really helpful in your early life, but who was the pillar in your childhood home?
I would say my mom was the pillar of the family. Like I said before, my dad traveled a lot. He worked very, very hard and instilled a great work ethic in me, which was fantastic, and I'll continuously thank him throughout my life. But my mom was definitely the pillar of the household, managing three kids while working full-time. We always had a home-cooked meal. We always sat around the dinner table, and she was instrumental to make sure that we all talked about our days, talked about our successes, talked about our schoolwork, talked about stories, and then talked about also just the family. So,
if she were here with us today, is there anything you'd like to tell your mom you've never told her before?
I probably have not thanked her enough, even though I'm sure I've thanked her over the years. I probably have not told her that she was the pillar of our family. So she would probably she'd probably like that. She's a very emotional woman, though, so she might well up in tears just right here. So,
what's the website?
Our website is www.chariotsforhire.com.
This is your host, Dana Theus. I'd like to thank our guests today, David Notari, CEO, Innovation Health, Mary Giliberti, CEO and Executive Director, National Alliance on Mental Illness, Maria Ezzarietta, CFO, Three Pillar Global, and Courtney West, owner and president of Chariots for Hire. I'd like to thank my co-host, Terry Kenny with TD Bank, for helping me structure the interviews, and our sponsor, Offutt Kerman. And of course, I'd like to thank you, our listening audience, for listening. Otherwise, we wouldn't have a radio show. Don't forget to check our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. Have a good day. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to Executive Leaders Radio, the region's premier radio show highlighting local executive leaders. We hope you've enjoyed the show here on 1500 AM. You can learn more about Executive Leaders Radio by visiting executiveleadersradio.com or tune in next time right here on 1500 AM. That's executiveleadersradio.com.
Join the Animal Welfare League of Arlington as they roll out the red carpet for shelter animals at the second annual Golden Paw Gala, Saturday, November 1st. At the Westin Arlington Gateway, mix and mingle with adoptable shelter dog celebrities, sip martinis, indulge in fine dining, and dance to the tunes of Odyssey Band. Hosted by WTOP's Joan Jones and Dr. Katie from The Pet Show on News Channel 8, event proceeds support services provided by the Animal Welfare League of Arlington. To purchase tickets, visit awla.org.
What do Batman, police cars, moon bounces, and dump trucks all have in common? They will be at the World of Wheels for CASA, a Touch a Truck and Family Festival to raise funds for abused and neglected children. Come to Dematha High in Hyattsville on Saturday, September 27th from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. for the World of Wheels presented by Pepco, where families can explore the vehicles that keep our community moving, such as an armored security vehicle, metro police vehicles, and a turbo haul bulk trash truck. See Batman and the Batmobile from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. and enjoy moon bounces, games, and more throughout the event. Tickets will be sold at the gate for $5 and $10 for VIP packages. Children 2 and under are free. Become a CASA volunteer and protect the best interest of abused and neglected children in foster care. For more information or to volunteer, go to pgcasa.org.
It's estimated that more than 25 million cases of the flu are reported each year, but you can protect yourself with an annual flu vaccine. Join WTOP, Adventist Healthcare, and M&T Bank as we help stop the flu by hosting a free adult flu shot clinic Wednesday, October 1st from 7 to 9:30 a.m. at Westfield Montgomery Mall. The first 103 flu shots will be free. For more, visit WTOP.com, search flu. That's WTOP.com, search flu.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWT FM HD2 Manassas. This is Federal News Radio, on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense Council of Federal Community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. The Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, American University Eagles, Washington Nationals, and the Washington Capitals. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
This paid commercial.